String 26. Catalog. The Erdidact has returned to his home planet of Farnomdagro in his personal ship of war, Mantle's Approach. His privileges have been restored, but he is not in command. Catalog has been reassigned to him, without his objection, to my surprise. The Isodidact has not yet arrived, nor has the librarian. She and the Erdidact have not seen each other for 1,000 years. The Erdidact stands motionless in the middle of their estate's main dwelling, clad in a new suit of combat armor, a dark presence in a grim, chaotic scene. Council agents ransack the private quarters as well. The house is in a state of perilous confusion. In 2 of the 6 wings, chambers and rooms climb up and over each other and rearrange randomly beneath the glowing night sky. He has attempted to restore some order, but the quarters where he and his wife raised their children and lived through their brightest and darkest centuries are too traumatized to recover without demolition, wiping, replacement. Many of the librarian's specimen stasis bubbles have been breached by council agents attempting to find evidence against her. Their content set free. Many of them attacked each other or fled. Mangled cadavers have been arranged in odd heaps by house monitors. Few are now alive to eat or to be eaten. He approaches a badly injured Tarantovir, 50 times his size, a gentle beast of intelligence and wisdom. "She will return soon, old one," he murmurs, stroking the great head behind one glazed and fading eye. "What will she find? A broken and crippled home. A broken and crippled husband." He glances at me, still stroking the leathery hide. "The beast is dead." "We have become our own enemy, Catalog." I am too saddened to reply, and it takes a great deal to sadden a juridical. Glowing clouds of interstellar gas slide below the horizon, remnants of the supernova wavefront that passed 1,000 years ago. The Erdidact summons memories of children from long ago. The young ones leap and scamper about, and I glimpse the Didact in those far-gone years, reaching out to lift a young female to his shoulders, or parrying a stick playfully swung by a young male, or bending to pet a furry creature held by another child. A pet, not unlike a small human, I think. There is something different about this Didact from his younger projected self. Something I cannot completely understand. "No war, no fighting," he murmurs. "Eternal bliss. Progress and development without pause. Impossible dream." "The librarian's dream?" I ask, too boldly.
"Not at all. She understands life. How could they not? Peace and cooperation, never painful or deadly competition. That's what they must have desired. They understood nothing about their creations, really. Else why open themselves to that sort of rebellion? Madness. It could only lead to madness."
"You speak of the precursors." He ignores my question and asks his own.
"What is this other like? The foolish manipulator I was forced to imprint?"
"To my knowledge, he has conducted himself well, even impressively," I say.
"I should not resent him. The choices they made."
"Precursors?" I ask.
"Forerunners,"
he mutters, shaking his great head. He stretches out his arms to imitate the image of his younger self, then moves into the image until he is swarmed by translucent children, all of whom grew up and chose their father's rate, all of whom died in the war with the humans. The sight is striking. A glowering old warrior servant surrounded by happy youths. These memories must bring far more pain than relief or peace. And then I understand. These memories are not meant to soothe. They are meant to prepare. At a wave of his hand, the children vanish. The house seems to draw in a breath of cold wind. He slowly turns and examines me as if I am new and unfamiliar.
"I reject the assertion that you are all the same,"
he says.
"The unit the Master Builder sent with us into the burn helped to save me. Of that I'm convinced. It performed with extraordinary courage. It was special. He was special."
My curiosity is intense. The Erdidact has yet to tell what happened on the Hulk sent into the burn. No other survivors have been found.
He came between me and the Gravemind, just as I was being delivered up. Then monitors moved in. Grapplers held and froze catalog. Before I could see more, I was removed.
The Erdidact shudders, then points his arm along a line that thrusts down through the planet.
She's here. She's in the system,
he says, as if sensing the librarian's presence across time and space. Instead of joy, however, he exhibits a peculiar bleakness, then contorted anger. He squares his body with mine.
Send Bornstellar to me when his ship arrives. Alone.
He stalks off to a side chamber, and when I try to follow, he waves me off. I am alone on the plaza, under the night's knotted weave of interstellar mist. Only a few of the house monitors still function. Many hide in the shadows, eyes glowing like small animals. I am little more than a servant myself now. Not of the Didact, but of a system of reckoning and justice that may no longer exist. The shadows grow deeper and longer as the stars wheel westward and a great black torso of uncondensed nebula rises to zenith. One of the functioning monitors approaches. We should all greet our mistress, it says. Of course. I am now indeed at the level of these cowering servants. I wonder about the courage of the Erdidact's catalog. We are all the same. We are not all the same. But one or many, same or different, I must seek truth. And so I go with the monitor, away from the plaza to the landing platform, which minutes later fills with light and echoes with thunder as a life worker ship pushes through the heated air and comes to a pause just centimeters from the buffering arms of its hard, light cradle. The Gathering. The Isodidact has reunited with the librarian. Each is accompanied by Catalog. Catalog becomes a triad, one unit with three points of view. Three juridical agents, brought together, create a personal network and share information. This affords a unique opportunity to observe the reunion of the Erdidact, the Bornstellar, or Isodidact, and the librarian. Monitors, the few that still function, assign the gathering to a wing of the house only lightly damaged by the council agent's rough work. A long, wide hall proudly configures itself for the reunion of the two greatest defenders of the Ecumene. For the time being, at the request of the Erdidact, the librarian does not attend. The two versions of the Didact differ only slightly in mass and are much the same in shape. Both wear battle armor. The Isodidact has fewer scars than his original, but both have obviously survived serious combat. Between them there is no preamble, no greeting or amenities. They know each other as well as one may know himself. Thousands of years of both life and experience nevertheless define the Erdidact, but something substantive is different, something unparalleled in juridical experience with this Promethean. The Isodidact is calm, expectant but not tense. The Erdidact speaks first.
I've never apologized, he says. It had to be done. What she and I did to you. I serve,
the Isodidact says.
It was my privilege.
You have been partner, and a good one to my wife, while I could not. Husband or protector. While I was in my cryptum, she made her deals, got what she needed.
You saw the results. Now our testimony, our evidence has been gathered. Was there a great crime? Did we kill the last of our creators?
We did, with full justification.
And you believe that?
Absolutely.
What were they like, the precursors, when we sent fleets to hunt them down and destroy them?
Unlike the Primordial, unlike the Gravemind on the Rogue Halo. Unlike the Flood, almost certainly.
Were they like you and me? Warriors?
The Life Shaper has not shared that knowledge with me,
the Isodidact tells him. The Erdidact reaches out as if to touch his duplicate. The Isodidact withdraws a step.
You feel it?
The Erdidact says. Tell me what I feel.
We are no longer the same.
The Erdidact says.
Look at that forsaken sky. The shadowy dust of old suns glowing deep inside with young light. New stars being born. Planets condensing like rain, covering themselves almost immediately in a velvet of life. When I was young, I saw a universe filled with threat and constant danger. It took the librarian to teach me it was more beautiful than I could bear. Beauty second only to her own.
And now? The Isodidact asks.
All I see are the colors of nightmare.
The Erdidact says.
Every star turned against us.
And so it is. His second agrees. The last combined Forerunner fleet made a stand out beyond Jad Sapar. Thousands of star roads sheltered and magnified the enemy's strength, protecting swarms of ships. Forerunner ships, crewed by our own infected warriors. A perversion beyond imagining, but not beyond reality.
I do not need to imagine.
They will need us. Both of us. Together.
And the Ark?
It is our last defense. All that remains of the Forerunners. The two Didacts look up and out at the great swath of dusty darkness that is the nebula's outstretched arm. The new-fired young suns within this black cloud are buried deep and do not yet shine through, though in thousands of years they certainly will.
What else do you see?
The Isodidact asks.
What I've always seen. What we've always seen.
The Erdidact answers.
But now it is different.
There is something about this one that makes even Catalog uneasy. A coiled potential only partly visible in his duplicate.
The light is over 100 years old, the Isodidact says.
What could change?
Something deeper than frequency. Look again.
The Erdidact says.
The way it invades our eyes. Piercing. Slicing.
Concealing. The light shuns us. Space itself wishes to expel us, can't you see? We are no longer welcome here. This opening is not fortuitous. There is a slow calculation between the two.
The flood changes everything. Not just flesh. Space itself is infected.
The Erdidact continues.
That's the power the precursors once had, isn't it? They shaped and moved galaxies. They created us. How did we ever manage to defeat them?
Perhaps they were powerful but naive, the Isodidact says. But they've had 10 million years to contemplate those mistakes.
Yes. The grave minds suck experience from all sentient history. One of them did everything but absorb me, saw right through me, understood every strategy I've ever devised. They've advanced far beyond the primordial. In absence of old strategies, new ones must be made.
I don't believe so, the Isodidact says. What we saw years ago at Charim HaKor, before you imprinted me, the result of a unique halo test. Complete destruction of all precursor artifacts. Back then it seemed an awful aberration. But now we know what halos are really capable of. They can destroy any structure that relies on neural physics. They are our last hope.
The Erdidact turns aside, fists clenching.
And loose damnation on the stars,
he shouts. The Isodidact is silent. The sky above is no less grim than these walls.
My wife sympathizes with our enemies,
the Erdidact says.
This quest to fulfill the mantle has haunted me my entire life. And for countless millennia, we have failed to realize the one truth that could have saved us from the beginning. The mantle isn't to be inherited by the noble. It is to be taken by the strong.
The librarian enters the room unannounced and alone. It takes a few minutes for this pair, like figures in a broken mirror, to realize that she has arrived.
Beloved, she says, stepping forward, arms out. And for a moment, her face is wreathed with hope. Her joy is radiant, and then it fades. The two didacts observe her with very different expressions. What should have been heartfelt reunion feels painful and incomplete.
Did you hear my blasphemy, wife?
The Ur-didact grumbles, looking away.
Do I discredit your belief in the mantle?
It is not ours to receive, not theirs to give, not now, she says. Tell me, my husband.
She looks long and hard at the Ur-didact.
Is this anger, this hatred for your enemies, what stands between us and the joy of reunion?
The Ur-didact moves toward his wife with a strangely dominant delicacy, his gaze fixed on her.
She regards him with cautious fascination.
Humans drowned out entire civilizations with the flood,
he says.
They brought this horrific parasite to our people. Had we acted quicker, had we taken what was rightfully ours, we could have cut off the infection at its source. Know this. The universe will now be turned star by star, world by world, organism by living thing, into even more of a tortured mockery than it already is. Look what it's done to me.
He spreads wide his powerful arms, bowing his head as if opening to her gentle fingers, her probing, deep-feeling examination. Instinctively, she reaches toward him, but holds back at the last instant. He notes her reticence. It may be the final breaking strain on thousands of years of love.
Everything it touches is afflicted with madness,
he cries out.
It has touched me. I am myself mad.
The librarian is stunned. She searches her husband's features, but he turns aside. His duplicate cannot convey what he feels. He stands mute before them.
Departure and pursuit. The reuniting has not gone well. The Ur-didact has taken a sphinx to the other side of the planet, where, he says, monitors report a possible intruder. As the arrival of spore-carrying ships cannot be ruled out, he will carry out a direct inspection.
The Iso-didact has returned to orbit to ready their fastest remaining ship, the Audacity, ceded to the librarian after her historic voyage. When we depart, the entire planet will be supercooled, then powered down. From any distance greater than a few dozen kilometers, it will resemble a rocky, frozen residue of recent battles, abandoned for years, stripped of all resources. When we depart, the entire planet will be supercooled, then powered down. Perhaps this effort, though seemingly futile, will save Nondagro.
On a parapet, monitors gather in long rows, like servants of old awaiting the departure of their mistress. She stands near the outer wall of the parapet, looking out over the great river valley where their children once played and were trained by the Ur-didact. Pleasant and now intensely painful memories. Most of her life has been centered on this world. We may never return, she says. All of this. She cannot complete her thoughts. She flees from the parapet, leaving the machines to finish their final tasks. The Iso-didact does not stop at preparing Audacity for departure. He orders the ship to pass over the far side of the planet. Catalog is with him. Two parts of the triad are with the librarian, but the Ur-didact is alone, on a continent set aside for primitive life forms, its quietness until now undisturbed. The Iso-didact surveys the continent from space, then makes inquiries of a local tectonics monitor. The monitor is sluggish, preparing to power down for the long sleep this world will soon endure. But there has been no impact. Of that it is certain. The Iso-didact finds his original on a long, sinuous island of ancient basalt. Great expanses of wart and moss and slime molds flourish here, bathed in creeping mists, on the edges of a shallow sea where bacterial nodules and mats compete with stalk-rooted pillow-frond forests, where the most primary first-form animals creep through waters now lit by day and warmed by the sun, while night has returned to the river valley. Here also is the only precursor artifact on the entire planet, a circular temple-like structure of no apparent purpose, perhaps half a billion years old. It is so small that only the most complete listings mention it.
It consists of a ring of blunt, rounded towers rising from a flat and featureless base, mottled gray and white, covered in places by blankets of moss, though they draw no sustenance from its impassive surface. While immobile and eternal, as all precursor structures were until now, this one has no apparent purpose. Perhaps it once served as a kind of marker, a testimonial to far-ranging expedition or the foundation of some other structure long removed or decayed. The Isodidact descends in a seeker and lands nearby. The Erdidact ignores the interruption, plodding through shallow, brackish ponds toward the ring of towers, under the flowing and ever-present mist, an intruder in the peace. He squats before the artifact, clasping and unclasping his hands. His duplicate approaches across a low, mossy glade. The Erdidact acknowledges his presence. "Humans would have prayed to this," he says. "Everywhere they found powers and forces, in oceans and rivers, in trees, in animals, even in rocks. Forerunners pray their sorts of prayers only to the mantle. Who, then, is more deserving?"
"Why have you come here?" the Isodidact asks.
"When we first met, Bornstellar, you were looking for treasure. Perhaps it is here, and we never recognized it."
"Nothing's changed here."
"We should return now. You don't sense it."
The Erdidact continues to stare at the ring of pillars.
"This is how we will know they're coming."
He turns and glares angrily. "What wisdom have you acquired, buried in my pattern, in the shape of my flesh? Am I to be set aside, and you, no doubt screaming under all that pattern, perhaps hope to return to what you were? Or do you find this pattern more suitable, and hope to replace me?"
"The Life Shaper and I have work to finish, and so do you. There are no plans to set you aside."
"You still can't read her as well as I. She is stubborn, brilliant as a nova, dark as a singularity with infinite depths. I've never discovered the core of her emotions, herself."
"I wonder what her duplicate would be like. What it would feel like to wear her imprint.
To so many species, she has made herself like unto a god, that they will remember her, that she can manipulate them in future times. She's explained that to you, hasn't she?"
"I remember."
"Second-hand memory."
The Erdidact rises and stretches out his armor. The hard light sparks with emotion.
"You're a poor copy at best, aren't you?"
Catalogue is concerned that the long conflict may now turn physical. The Erdidact approaches his duplicate. They stand, barely separated by the reach of their great arms, surrounded by the swirling mist, the sough of the light breeze, the rhythmic lap of wavelets.
"There is no hope continuing with your strategy, not in our time, not in this galaxy,"
the Erdidact says.
"That is a cold, simple fact."
"I hold another opinion."
"Your privilege, Manipular."
The Erdidact's expression is disdainful.
"The halos? Violating the mantle all over again, with even greater destruction, wiping out all intelligent life across this galaxy. By itself, that proves you are a poor version."
"You've altered your strategic vision. According to circumstance, as every commander must."
"Don't you feel the truth of it? We gave the precursors reason to retreat into madness, a passion for vengeance, and the Gravemind gave it all right back to me. I am filled with that passion, that madness, that poison. If we fire Halo, we lose everything."
The two Didacts stand opposite each other, barely moving, barely breathing, as if sizing each other up. Their armor is evenly matched. Their weapons are identical, their defenses identical, but the Didacts themselves, no longer identical.
"I leave the Life Shaper to you, Bornstellar," the Erdidact says.
"She has obviously chosen your way, not mine. I will take my own ship and you will show me where the Ark has been hidden."
Catalogue is taking sides, and should not. But the rule of law for juridicals is that hope must never be lost, justice and balance never abandoned. The mantle, after all, is about the diversity and eternal prospect of living change in a universe filled with life. Is that no longer true? Is this what Catalog felt, facing the grave mind? A total consumption of alien reason, of ancient, mad hopelessness? And then it happens. There is a soft, liquid sound from the center of the island. Both turn to see what it might be. The artifact, the circle of blunted towers, is moving. The towers extend, connect, form a nested cage. The base expands.
The flood,
the Ur-Didact says.
We have to leave, now.
Through low gray clouds, we witness another change. In the skies above the planet, arc by arc, curve by curve, star roads appear where none were before, surrounded by a purple fringe of precursor superluminal passage. A kind of motion, of travel, not seen for 10 million years, but now apparent around the Ecumene, perhaps across the galaxy. Then something screams down from the sky. A single, mottled gray and white ovoid, 10 meters long. It plunges upright into shallow water, shooting out a spray of steam and burying one end in the muck, while the other end is already dissolving.
Spore capsule,
the Isodidact says.
No time remains.
The two didacts agree at least on this. For the last time, the two didacts stand barely a long arm's length apart, and then, slowly, back away, neither turning, before they are many paces separated, to return to their separate craft, to rise to orbit in separate ships. Catalog is refused entry into the Ur-Didact Sphinx. Something is wrong. Even as we pick up the librarian, prepare to rise to audacity, and witness Mantle's approach climb up behind us, matching our destination vector, the air is pierced by a plunging haze of millions of spore capsules. Some drop into ocean or land, more yet explode high in the atmosphere. Spore clouds tower into gray-brown thunderhead plumes, then fan out in winding drifts, dominating, covering, concealing. The triad of Catalog can do nothing but observe. And what I observe far below is the clearing of the brownish-gray clouds, revealing a warty formation of spore mountains. Any organisms remaining will soon be absorbed by the flood. Audacity has determined there is enough local potential that it can carry us all swiftly to the margins of Thema 34 before making the final jump to the Greater Arc. Key ships will soon be the only vessels allowed to approach the installation. The Isodidact and the librarian link arms on the bridge.
He's coming to the Ark with us, he tells her.
She appears stricken, uncertain, lost. What are his plans now? To sit in his fortress like a trapdoor spider so that he can leap out and destroy ages from now?
You don't know that.
Don't I? I see it so clearly. Oh, what did that thing do to him? What have we all done to him? The Isodidact says nothing. As we leave the blighted system, the silence on Audacity is awful.